Welcome to the Mo Money, Mo Progress podcast. We bring you interviews with amazing people who share advice about how to make more money and manage what you got.
Welcome back to the Mo Money, Mo Progress podcast. My name is Gwen, and on today's episode, you're going to learn how to turn your passion to profit. How? Well, simply with a careergasm, of course. We have Sarah Vermont on the program today, and she is the founder of Careergasm, and her company helps you create work that feels good. I'd love to share a little bit more about Sarah before we get right into the interview. So Sarah's a career coach. She's a former biz professor, and she writes about careers for major media. She writes for Forbes, Entrepreneur, Huffington Post, and her work has been featured in places like the Toronto Star, Flair Magazine, Global News, the Globe and Mail, and she is honestly just getting warmed up. And I've actually personally hired Sarah to help me to have a careergasm and create work that feels good, so I can personally say I really stand behind her advice. So I hope you're ready. Grab that pen and paper or that coffee and get ready to listen to Sarah Vermont's story on creating work that feels good.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
I am very happy to be on the show today.
I am thrilled, Sarah. I am simply thrilled to have a chance to interview you. You are the best. You've helped me so much in my life, and I can't wait to share your story and have everyone listening today really get some great advice from you.
Oh, honey, you're sweet.
I am. Just kidding. And modest. Okay, so we want to start by starting with a rapid fire round. So before we get into the Sarah careergasm story, let's find out some like weird things about you.
Oh, okay. Bring it on.
Okay, so my first question for you is, what is your greatest extravagance?
Greatest extravagance is probably a day at the spa.
Ooh, calming. I love it.
Right? Yeah.
What is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the word money?
Yes.
Yes. I love that.
Is that enough?
Perfect. It's kind of like a yes, I'm accepting money now. Come to me now.
Yeah.
What is your favorite financial tool or app that you use?
It's actually Excel. I know that's really old school, but Excel.
It's actually, I'm right there with you, actually.
Yeah. I love my Excel budget.
Love it. What was your first freelance job that you ever had?
Oh, I don't believe I've ever had a freelance job. I'm not a gal who's worked freelance. I've worked as an entrepreneur before, and I've worked as an academic, and I've worked in the corporate world, but never freelance.
You avoided it. Good work.
I didn't avoid it. I mean, actively. It's yeah. No, I don't believe I've done any freelance work.
What is something that you patiently saved up for to buy?
Oh, a condo.
Oh, that's good. That is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite financial book or resource?
Actually, I was just telling one of my clients about this book yesterday. It's actually about pricing, so it's money related. It's called Breaking the Time Barrier, and it's about value-based pricing for your service-based business.
What's
real? Actually, you should read it.
I'm writing that down.
Yeah,
actually, it's recorded.
It's written by the founder of FreshBooks. And it's actually, I have a hard copy, but it's available free online.
Oh, geez. Thank you for that recommendation. And if you were to be gifted $10,000 today, no strings attached, what would you do with it?
Oh, you know, this is so lame, but I'd probably just save it. That's totally not glamorous. I would save it.
That is not lame. That is not lame at all. I mean,
I would save it for something juicy later.
What would that juicy thing be?
Probably a really wonderful vacay or like towards a lovely future home.
Oh man, love it. Mm-hmm. I love that. So I want to start by, before we get into the careergasm origin story, love to hear about what was your first job out of university?
Oh, well, this is really unglamorous. I had a shitty retail job selling candles and bubble bath at a store in a mall. And I did that probably for about, I don't know, maybe 4 months after I graduated. It was a part-time job that I had in school. And when I graduated from school, I studied journalism. I focused on television journalism. I knew I didn't want to do that as a career, but I didn't yet know what I wanted to do. So I knew what I didn't want, but not what I did want. So I just kind of kept the job I had.
I'm in the exact same boat, except it was restaurant work. was working as a hostess at a steakhouse for 4 months trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I was just kind of like in transition mode. I didn't apply for a single journalism job, not a single one.
Hmm. Yeah. When you got your job back, did you negotiate at all? Or was it just like, you know, I'll take anything, I'll do it, you know? What was that process like?
For that first job?
Yeah.
I just asked for full-time hours. So I was already there part-time as a student. And I just asked for full-time hours. And they loved me there. So it was an absolute yes. And I was really glad. That took the pressure off.
See, what was like, would you say is your first like real grown-up person at a real job?
First grown-up job.
Weird, but...
No. I know exactly what you mean. Like an actual respectable job that you're not ashamed to tell people about.
Yes.
Yes. So after my shitty retail job, I applied to work actually at Ryerson University, which is the same school I studied at. I applied to their department for recruitment and admission. And my very first job that was like a really like awesome salary professional job was actually recruiting students around Ontario and around the country to come to Ryerson University. So I don't know if you remember being in high school and you would have people come to your school and be like, rah, rah, our school's awesome. You should apply here. That was my job. So it was awesome.
That is awesome. You're basically, you know, you love the experience of going to school. Now it's like, come and do it too, kids.
Yeah, like I got paid. And to me at the time, it was a lot of money. I got paid a lot of money to recruit something that I was actually really psyched about anyway.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you're in this great job, but you know, you wanted to grow, you wanted to expand. I mean, how did you go from this great job, great salary, things are going well, you travel a lot, to getting to the place where you wanted to start your own business? How did that process go?
Okay, so I'll give you the short version of the story. There were like a few phases of evolution in there. So I worked as a recruiter, I got a 4-month contract, and it ended. And at the time, they didn't have money to keep me on. So my boss, Charmaine at the time, was like, we really like you. We'd really like you to come back, but I won't know until January or February. So I was like, okay, crossing my fingers and toes. And I actually took a month or two to travel. And I went to Taiwan for a month and not knowing if I would have a job or anything when I came back. I was like, okay, well, this is probably the only time in my life where I'll be able to do this kind of thing. And I did that. When I got back, it turns out I did get offered a job and I worked as a liaison officer, so a recruiter, and also as an admissions officer. So one of the people who's responsible for admitting people into the university. Did that for a couple of years, maybe 5 years or so, continued to take more responsibility. And then I got offered a big promotion to become a manager for the department that runs the services. So the people who interface with the applicants for that department. And it was a big leap. I really felt like I did not know what I was doing, but my boss had a lot of faith in me. And I remember the one thing she said was, we're looking for someone with vision. And I was so flattered that she thought I had vision because I had never, to be honest, thought of myself as someone with vision before. So I took the job, did really well in the job, and I was there for about 2 years. But about a year into that position, I felt like I wasn't really growing anymore. And there wasn't anywhere that was obvious for me to move. I didn't want my boss's job. There wasn't like another unit at the university that I wanted to work for. And I had just finished my first master's degree. And I thought, oh, you know, I think I might really like to teach at a university. So I applied for a PhD, got in, and then had to make the decision of whether or not I'd do it. And I went for it. I quit my stable, great paying job, benefits and a pension to try something else. And so I did my PhD, didn't finish it, ended up teaching at a university though for a short while, and then realized that the thing I liked most about my teaching gig actually was mentoring students. And I had already been building a career coaching practice while I was working teaching at the university. And most of my students knew I was a career coach. And so when I was teaching upper year students, they would be like, hey, Sarah, can we have coffee before or after? Because I don't know what the hell I'm doing, and I'm really freaked out. And that was my favorite part of my job, not the actual teaching, certainly not the research. I hated doing research, which is why I never finished the PhD. And at some point, I was just like, okay, there's this tiny piece of my job that I really love. I want to do something like that full time. And so I quit the whole shebang, and I've been doing this career coaching ever since.
And everyone can read about Sarah's, she had a moment in Starbucks when it was like the breakdown before the breakthrough. So I encourage you all to go over to careergasm.com to read that. But so Sarah, so you had that glimpse of, I want more of this in my life, that coaching and having people come to you feeling a bit like, oh my God, and then leaving with like a Zen mode. I can attest to this because I've worked with you. So what did you do like to get more of that feeling that you really wanted?
When I started the business or before?
When you kind of quit the PhD and then you were, what did you do to really like go full steam ahead into building your business?
Oh, actually, one of the things that really helped me launch into it was writing. That is just one of the ways that I connect with people. And a lot of people have come to me because they've read something I've written and they're like, that chick gets what I'm going through. So I need to talk to her and I need to hire her as my coach because she just gets it. So believe it or not, writing was one of the things that helped launch my business and helped me feel comfortable, not only with helping other people, but with being okay about my own story. I have written about my own challenges, and I think that's one of the things that has brought my kind of people my way. So I would say writing was a big part of it. And then just, you know, taking on clients. And at first when I was coaching, I wasn't quite sure what type of clients I wanted to work with. So it was a little bit of trial and error, taking on different types of people with different problems, seeing what kind of people I wanted to work with, and very quickly finding out what kind of people I didn't want to work with, actually. Yes.
Was there a certain type of person that you really did not like working with?
Oh, yeah. I do not like working with people with really old school corporate norms. So I do some executive and leadership coaching as well. So people who are really up there in their organizations, but I don't like to work with people who are really mired in old school corporate thinking.
Yeah, especially. You know what?
They wouldn't like me either because they're just not my kind of client.
I mean, if you hear the name of your company, Careergasm, I think you take such a strong stand.
Yeah, I'm a little edgy. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So at what point did you decide, okay, so I'm going at this full time. I want to invest in yourself and work with Martha Beck, coach to Oprah. How did that all happen?
Actually, I was still in my PhD when I did my coach training. Well, my very first coach training was about 10 years ago, and I studied executive management coaching. Never really did anything with it. And then I have been such a fan of Martha Beck for as long as I can remember. I have been reading O Magazine, Oprah's magazine, for 15 years since the first issue came out. And I think Martha has been writing for it for just as long. So I have been following her monthly column forever. And like, I really just dig what she's cooking. She's very honest. She's a woman who's really wise, but she's also really neurotic. And I love that mix of humanity and wisdom that she has. It's like she wears her neuroses on her sleeve. And, you know, I've watched her on her episodes of Oprah. And so I was on her website one day and realized that she had coach training. And it was an absolute, like, lightning strike. Yes. I wasn't even sure if I had enough money to do it. But whatever money I had, I was pouring into it. Like, I was a PhD student at the time. And her coach training is really expensive, but the appeal was such a strong yes that I just poured everything I had into it.
So what do you think? So you've invested a lot of money in the coaching. Mm-hmm. What? And I know there's a lot of people who will be listening to this, myself included, who are interested in investing money, you know, in yourself. Curious to know what you feel you got out of putting such a big investment in yourself in that experience.
I don't know. I think there's something to be said for allowing yourself to have what you want versus giving yourself something you think you should have or you need to have in order to succeed. With the Martha Beck coach training, it was a really strong, like, desire-based investment, not necessarily a rational, well, I should do this investment. So the whole process felt really good, and I was leaning into something that, gosh, I'm not a woo-woo person, but like, it really felt like it was really good for my soul. And when you can give yourself that kind of gift, all sorts of good shit starts opening up for you. It did for me, at least.
Tell us about some of the good shit.
Well, I mean, that coach training is one of the things that enabled me to be comfortable enough with myself to quit my PhD 93 pages into my dissertation. It was a very difficult decision, but had I not had the coach training, which really not only helped me coach other people, but helped me learn how to coach myself, had I not had that training, I think I would have been too worried about what other people were going to think, too worried about, you know, like maybe too much shame associated with not finishing. But honestly, making that decision is one of maybe that is the best decision I've ever made in my life. So I'd say the training changed my life, not just my business.
Wow. So you, that's profound to actually be at a place where, you know, the, like, one of the best decisions you ever made, like, that's real clarity. So yeah. How did you, tell us about the Careergasm branding. I've never asked you this before, but how did you come up with this idea, this concept? Where's this coming from?
Oh my gosh. Okay, first I have to tell you how I fucked things up the first time.
I can't wait. Do tell.
Well, I think you probably already know this story or a bit of it. So when I was first, you know, deciding I was going to start a coaching practice and that it was going to be a career coaching practice and a business coaching practice, I had an idea in my head of what it had to look like. And it had to look like something really sort of boxy and professional and credible and legitimized. And so I actually started under a different brand. I called it Aspire Coaching. On my bio was a picture of me sitting at a corporate table wearing a white button-down shirt, looking very serious. And that is so not me. So I actually did things very wrong before I embraced the fact that I could just be myself in my business. And so that's actually one of the things that I help my clients with a lot. Everybody's afraid that they can't be themselves either at work or in their business because they think something bad will happen if, you know, something bad will happen if I'm myself. And I've been there. So I totally know what that fear feels like. And so after working with clients under my old brand with my old image, I realized that I was attracting the wrong people because I wasn't being myself and I was putting out a different kind of vibe that wasn't me. So I actually was not enjoying the people I worked with because they weren't my people. And I thought, okay, well, you know, we're taking risks here. What if I was just myself? I'm a pretty kooky, sassy person. So I wanted to create a company that sort of had a name related to career and happiness and feel good stuff somehow. So I came up with Careergasm. I looked up the domain and the social media handles. It wasn't taken and it kind of went from there.
I'm just always interested in the, like, the story of how you come up with the name, because it's always kind of, it feels like that moment of, oh my God, I can see it now. The whole brand's unfolding.
Yeah, well, that exact process of coming up with the name was me sitting with a notepad at a Starbucks, thinking of ways to combine names that were both related to work and feel good happiness stuff. And so I was writing, like, I mean, I probably still have the pages. I have like 2 pages of just like trying to combine different words related to work and career and feel good. And I mean, the feel good thing really came in when I thought of Careergasm.
It's so great. You just get it right away.
Perfect. Yeah.
So let's talk about, a lot of people that will listen to this podcast are have an entrepreneurial spirit and probably want to start something themselves. How did you figure out when you were first starting out how to price your services and also, yeah, let's start there. How did you figure out the pricing when you were first starting?
Well, I guess when I was first starting, one of the things I did is I tried to see how other people who were doing similar work were pricing their services. And I tried to see, okay, like what kind of legitimacy and credibility do they have them compared to, let's say, what I have when I'm starting out? And I would just, you know, kind of price accordingly. I'd be like, oh, okay, well, if they're way up there and I'm like, you know, way down here and I'm just starting out, maybe this is a feel good price for me. So that was my actual first bit of research. But one of the things that helped me the most, and I still use this, is gut-based pricing. It's so unsophisticated, but it has really done wonders for me. And it works for a lot of my clients too. It's like, okay, what is an amount of money that I could charge people that would make me feel really good, that feels fair, that I know they're getting their money's worth? Like, what sits in a really good place for me? So I did value-based, well, it's not even really value-based pricing, it's gut-based pricing. Yeah. When I first offered my coaching packages, and actually I just changed my pricing maybe 3 to 4 months, maybe just like 2 months ago, because I've become a better coach since I started. I've done so much more. And it no longer, the first price I set wasn't really resonating for me anymore. more, so I had to up my prices.
Tell us about that, because I know, you know, when you're starting, and then if you look at all the work that you've done, all the places that you write for, all the people you've worked with, and results you got, it's like, yes, it's time to raise those prices. How did you go about that, you know, communicating it to people and also deciding this is how much I want to raise it by?
Well, I didn't have to communicate it with people. I have my pricing right on my website. It's like I'm very transparent. I'm kind of a higher end coach, so I attract clients who are really willing to invest, not only financially, but like emotionally and mentally too. I don't get the tire kickers and the people who just, you know, can't afford it. And I'm not in everybody's price range. And I had to be okay with that because I have a lot of experience. As you say, I've written for some big publications. I'm regularly writing for places like Entrepreneur, HuffPost. I've written for Forbes. I have a lot of experience and credibility behind what I do. A lot of education too. So charging more just made sense.
And what is your actual tool that you use to get paid? Because I find this is a weird roadblock for people. Like, what do you use? How do you get money into your bank account?
Sure. I actually was intentional about making it very simple upfront. So people come to my website and they can read, you know, there's like three or four different coaching packages I have. They see what appeals to them. They maybe email or talk to me on the phone a bit before they decide which one they want. And they just buy the program right on my website. And I have a plugin on my WordPress website that's called WooCommerce. And people just buy it right on the website and it goes in my PayPal account. So I don't charge people by the hour. I don't invoice them after I've done the coaching for them. They buy the entire coaching program up front.
I would say as a customer, I really appreciated that you were so like, this is how much it costs. Press this button to pay. Like, it was just easy. So I just...
Yeah. Okay, well, that's good feedback. And the wonderful thing about that too, as a business owner, so this might be good for your business owners and your entrepreneurs to hear, is if you are very transparent about your pricing and the process to purchase your products or services, you actually invite people who aren't your ideal clients to opt out. One thing I've noticed about a lot of coaches is they don't include their pricing on their website, probably because they're afraid that if they say how much they cost, people will not want to pay it, or they won't want to talk to them. So maybe they think, oh, I'd rather have people, you know, meet me for coffee first, or like have a little like consult call first before I tell them how much I charge. And as a consumer, that shit really bothers me. Like, I want to know what I'm getting into before I not waste my time, but before I invest my time in learning more about something. So for people, for example, who are out of my price range, it's just an invitation to opt out at that point. They're just not the right fit for my kind of client.
It's also very aspirational for a lot of people to see, wow, like she's charging that much money, and okay, I might not be able to afford it right now, but I know what it will take for me to get to work with Sarah.
Yeah. And I've actually had some clients who have said, I can't afford to work with you right now, but I want to save up for a couple of months. And they've hired me that way.
That's got to feel good for everybody.
Yeah. Well, it does feel nice to invest money in something that matters. I know personally, when I invest money in something that I know is helping me, like, it feels actually really good to spend the money on something that's going to either help you or that, like, anything that feels good.
I've heard, and I really believe this, like in the last couple of years, if you really want to see results in an area of your life, you've got to spend some money. You know, like, I don't know. I've just found that in my own life, if I've spent money to learn about nutrition or finances or like coaching, I value money. I don't want to let go of it. So what I do, it's like, I better do something. So I want to ask you about your digital program, Be Your Own Career Coach, a course for discovering your calling. Yes. Tell us about why you created this course and what it's all about.
That is basically the online do-it-yourself version of the one-on-one coaching I do with people. So usually when I coach people one-on-one, I sit across from them. Well, you know, because you're one of my clients,
yeah.
You know, we'll have a coffee, we'll sit down, we'll hash out, you know, whatever it happens to be. Your business, your career change, figuring out what you want, whatever. And I wrote a lot of content for this online course. There's more than 100 pages of like workbook materials, and there's videos. And I just wanted to have something for people who are do-it-yourselfers. I'm a pretty introverted person, and I'm not someone who necessarily wants to like hire a specific person to help me with everything I do. But I am someone who purchases online courses. There's a really cool cool, like, I don't know, like PDF program that I can buy on the internet. I'll do that. I like, you know, sitting in my jogging pants and pom-pom socks and like working something out at home. So I made something for those people. And also because my one-on-one coaching services are like a higher end price, this is something for people who really kind of dig my vibe, but can't work with me one-on-one.
Right. Because it's actually a much different price point from the one-on-one coaching.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of people that will be listening to this who are in, say, you know, recent graduate, freelancer, probably working, say like when I started, working as a hostess at a restaurant, but really have these like big dreams or really want to figure out what I could do for a career. What would you say to that person who knows there's something they want, they've got to fulfill, but they don't know how to get there and make money at the same time?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the money thing is so scary, isn't it? It almost overshadows the finding something you want to do because the money need is so immediate. You know, if you come out of school and you've got loans and you're on your own and you have to pay your bills. One of the things that really helps my clients, and I end up talking about this with almost every client I have, whether or not they're a new grad, this is a universal thing. It's almost like we're taught that we have to pick a box, that we have to know what we want to do for the rest of our lives. And that is absolutely untrue. And it drives people crazy. People feel like there's something wrong with them if they don't know what they want to do for the rest of their lives. But the world of work has really changed even in the past decade or so. You know, let's say for your parents' generation, you know, your parents, they came out of school, they picked something they wanted to do, and they probably continued on that path, you know, for most of their lives. Now, people don't have to do that anymore. You can work somewhere for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and then change paths completely. So I think part of the paralysis thing that people experience when they're new grads or young professionals is this outdated and really, it's an untrue, unnecessary pressure to figure out what you want to do, quote unquote, for the rest of your life. Because the pressure is too much. It doesn't give you an opportunity to dabble and explore and actually try out the different options that you might want to do.
You bring up such a good point. I know, you know, when you're, if you're going to school and say you're, you know, you're paying for school, you feel this intense pressure because you can't screw it up, because if you go down the wrong path, you know, how are you going to pay for that student loan? And also, you know, explain to your friends and family, I went down this path and I failed pretty badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And bringing friends and family into it, like that kind of pressure is a whole other category, because the pressure you feel there, usually it's often the people who want the best for you that put the most pressure on you. So it's like, you know, they're saying, oh, you should really do this because there's money in that. And it's usually a parent, let's be honest. You know, there's a parent who really cares about you, really loves you and thinks, you know, I know you really want to dabble in this area, but what if you just got a job in finance or, you know, something that seems really stable, right? And it's so well-intended and loving advice, but it's just the wrong advice for that person, because everybody only knows what their own version of happiness looks like, right? So when we get into money, and let's say, you know, you're a mother or father, you're worried about your son or daughter, you know, you're thinking happiness maybe equals security and happiness equals safety and having enough money. And certainly that's a part of it. But a lot of people come to me because they're on the wrong path, because they listen to some really well-intended but ultimately bad advice.
If you could, speaking of advice, I have a couple more questions for you, Sarah. If you could go back and tell yourself one piece of money or finance advice when you were first starting out in your career, what would you tell yourself?
What would I tell myself when I'm first starting my career? I would tell myself to have a budget and stick with it. I did. I did. So I didn't really need that advice, but I think it's really good advice, because it's so easy to let spending get away from you.
I know. Where did you learn about budgeting? Who was kind of your source for that?
I would say probably no particular source, but my upbringing was probably a source. So I grew up on a farm. There's five of us kids. My parents didn't have a lot of money. I mean, we had enough, but not a lot. We had just what we needed. So I had never really had extravagant things. So in some ways, I was better prepared than many to live with enough and the simple pleasures versus having a lot of things that were, you know, monetary things that were given to me as I was growing up. So when I, you know, graduated from undergrad, which I paid for myself, I had tons of loans. I knew what it was like to live very simply. And I had always been happy living very simply. So I would say it was probably probably just kind of my upbringing.
And if you could share with listeners one action, like say they're feeling extremely just overwhelmed and don't know where to start, what is one small action you would suggest to start getting on the right track with money?
This is actually something I have my clients do. So this is a really good question you're asking. Ask yourself how much you really need. A lot of people think they need more than they do. I mean, asking yourself what you need versus what you want, those are two very different things. And of course, let yourself dream big and figure out what you want. But there's a certain power in knowing how much you need, because usually it's not a whole lot. And if you know that you can have like a happy, successful life with not a whole lot of money, it really takes the pressure off and it enables you to do the things you want to do to start striving towards some of those maybe riskier feeling goals.
That is such great advice, because it seems like, you know, like if someone says, what's your dream salary? It's like, I don't know. But if you can figure out how much you need, then build on what you really want. That's
yeah.
So helpful.
And there's no reason why you can't look at both of those things at once, like what you want and what you need. But there's a power in knowing how much you need, because you're like, oh, like the sky isn't going to fall maybe if I consider a career change, or the sky isn't going to fall if I decide, you know, to go to film school instead of, you know, something that might be really lucrative.
We all love lucrative things, though, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you asked me what my first thought is when I said money, and my word was yes.
Yes.
Money is wonderful. Money is, and I'm sure you've heard this before, a lot of people have talked about this, money is a form of energy.
We want it to flow to us.
And, to us? Well, flow to us, and when it's flowing out, we want it to be flowing out in really, like, feel-good ways.
True. Oh, yeah, that's another reason why, you know, it's not about, like, oh, I just want so much money. It's like, what you can do with that money is amazing. So my final, I have two more questions for you, Sarah. What would you just say is your favorite piece of advice to give to people? Not necessarily money related, just life advice you'd love to give to people.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, as a coach, you're not really supposed to give a lot of advice. You're supposed to help people figure things out for themselves. But let me see here. What kind of advice do I give? This is really vague, but it kind of applies to anything. Does it feel, it's more of a question. See, when I'm a coach, I pose everything in a question. So I'm going to pose it in a question for you, but you'll know what I mean. Does it feel like love or does it feel like fear? When you're making a decision, if it feels like the thing you're forcing yourself to do, or you feel like you have to do something, that's fear. If it feels like a pull or like a strong desire, that's love. Another way to think about this is, does it feel like push or does it feel like pull? Like, are you feeling drawn into something or do you feel like you're being pushed down a certain path?
That was one of my favorite pieces of advice. Sorry, not advice, but like guideposts. You told me when we were coaching together, it was so true. It's like, do you feel like you're forcing this because you have to do it? Or is it, are you being guided there?
Because you can rationalize anything.
Absolutely. But I mean, that's why, I mean, where can everyone learn more, Sarah? Where can they connect with you? Where can they get more of the Sarah goodness?
Come to careergasm.com. You can find my Twitter handle there. You can find me on Facebook there. You can read the bazillion blogs I've written. You can find out how to work with me. You can find out how to take my course. So that's a good place to start, is careerorgasm.com.
Perfect. And I'd like to share with everyone, all the blogs are solid gold. It's not like, oh, something she just threw up there. It's like really awesome. So go to careerorgasm.com, everyone. Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show today. It has been so amazing to have the chance to interview you.
Thank you, Gwen. Likewise.
Thank you for listening. To find more interviews and tips to help you make Mo Money, go to momoneymoprogress.com.